Welcome to another AAT podcast, where today I want to tell you about salary sacrifice, something that has grown in popularity in the last decade. Salary sacrifice schemes have recently come under HMRC's spotlight because of perceived abuse of tax reliefs and Class 1 National Insurance contribution savings, and the concern at the loss of revenue to the Exchequer. HMRC has therefore restricted or withdrawn tax relief for some previously exempt benefits in kind, where they have been provided by an employer in conjunction with a salary sacrifice scheme or a flexible benefit scheme. This leads some commentators to question the value of salary sacrifice schemes and is leading to uncertainty about their continuation. But personally, I see them as a useful tool for employers, and future governments should not kill them off. Salary sacrifice is a contractual arrangement whereby an employee gives up the right to receive part of their cash remuneration, usually in return for their employer's agreement to provide some form of non-cash benefit. It has become popular in recent years, in part because of advances in information technology that have assisted the introduction of flexible benefit schemes, and also because of tax relief and/or Class 1 or Class 1A National Insurance contribution savings on benefits in kind, such as childcare, pensions, cycle-to-work schemes, bus passes, car parking at or near the place of work, and free or subsidised meals. It can also be used to provide a benefit that does not attract tax relief, but takes advantage of the employer's ability to buy in bulk, although there then may be PLMD reporting implications for the benefits provided by the employer. Another example of the use of salary sacrifice within a flexible benefits arrangement, where there are no tax relief implications, is the purchase of additional holidays, perhaps up to 5 days per annum, in return for a reduced salary. Section 2, HMRC Guidance. HMRC has published a lot of guidance on the subject, including an 8-page guide that can be found on its website. And there is also on the website a salary sacrifice question and answer section. HMRC's view on salary sacrifice is that it is a matter of employment law, not income tax law, and that employers and employees should take legal advice on whether the proposed arrangements achieve the desired result. HMRC's stated view is that its role is only an interest in determining how the tax and NIC legislation applies, and that it has to be satisfied that the salary sacrifice is effective. HMRC has always refused to give advance clearance on salary sacrifice schemes. But in its Q&A page, it provides details of a clearance procedure to be used after the salary sacrifice scheme has been introduced. This says, and I quote, "Employers are not obliged to consult us on variations to employees' terms and conditions, and are not obliged to tell us when they first offer a new benefit in kind. But it is open to employers when a salary sacrifice has been put in place to ask HMRC to confirm the correct tax treatment of the arrangement. Details should be sent to HMRC Clearances Team, Alexander House, 21 Victoria Avenue, Southend-on-Sea, Essex, postal code S for Sugar, S for Sugar 99, 1 B for Baker, D for Donald." This gives the employer reassurance that the arrangement has been implemented properly and they are acting correctly when not declaring benefits for tax purposes, operating PAYE, and paying NICs. If we are asked to comment on a salary sacrifice arrangement, we need to check two things. First, that an effective variation of the contractual terms and conditions has taken place, reducing some of the employee's cash earnings and providing a benefit in kind. Second, what the correct tax and NIC's treatment of the benefit in kind is. To check whether the sacrifice is effective, we will need to see evidence of the variation of terms and conditions, normally the contract variation. We will also need to see payslips before and after the variation in order to be satisfied that the change has been effected at the right time and not applied retrospectively. If there is no written contract, payslips may be the only available evidence of the variation. We will need information about the benefit in kind in order to be satisfied that it meets any conditions attached to any tax or NIC's exemption. For childcare vouchers, this will generally be the employer's voucher scheme rules to check that conditions on the availability of the benefit, qualifying children, etc. are met. So, folks, that's the guidance from HMRC. And we should remember that when HMRC officers come in to do a pay-as-you-earn audit or an employer compliance inspection, they will always ask about salary sacrifice schemes. Salary sacrifice schemes for pensions are also popular, although the duty benefit here is in the form of Class 1 National Insurance Contribution Savings. This is because tax relief, the more popular duty, shall we say, is normally due on employee pension contributions. But no relief can be obtained by employees against their Class 1 National Insurance Contribution deductions. AAT members working in payroll will understand that they have to work with two figures of gross pay. Firstly, the actual gross pay on which Class 1 NIC calculations are made. And then secondly, the gross pay for PAYE tax deductions, which is net of any qualifying employee pension contributions. The Class 1 National Insurance Contribution Savings are achieved by the employee sacrificing salary in return for the employer paying an employer pension contribution into the pension scheme. The employee may only save 1% unless the salary sacrifice is below the upper earnings limit, which is currently £43,875 per annum. Employees will save 11% Class 1 NICs if sacrificed earnings are below that upper earnings limit. In my experience, most employers will pass on at least part of the 12.8% secondary Class 1 employers' NIC savings. In the not-too-distant future, 6th of April 2011 to be precise, the 12.8% will rise to 13.8%, and the employees' NIC contributions will rise to 12% and to 2% over the upper earnings limit, so that these savings will be even more. I would also add my personal view that perhaps the biggest advantage I saw from my previous pension salary sacrifice was that I locked away more funds for what I hope will be a long and happy retirement. Other popular non-cash benefits provided through salary sacrifice include bicycles, bus passes, free or subsidised meals, and, to a lesser extent, car parking at or near the place of work, all taking advantage of income tax exemptions. I shall now consider some of these that have come under the revenue spotlight. On the 14th of December 2009, HMRC announced restrictions on the use of salary sacrifice involving cycles and bus passes, where salary sacrifice arrangements are used with the expectation that there is tax relief and no NIC's liability. The cycle to work schemes, which are quite popular, rely on the employment income exemption for loaned cycles. HMRC has announced that for schemes introduced after 18th December 2009, the tax exemption will be withdrawn unless the schemes fully satisfy the conditions for exemption. HMRC will in future apply the strict condition that the scheme must be generally available to all employees of the employer, which does not mean that all employees have to have a cycle to work. Some employees may be excluded because their sacrificed income would fall below the national minimum wage levels, and others because of legal barriers to an employee who is under 18 years of age being able to sign up to the type of financial agreement required. HMRC obviously does not view these schemes as being open to abuse, and has offered an olive branch in agreeing that it is possible to vary these schemes to offer loan cycles to any employees who cannot sacrifice salary to qualify. Any employer wanting to continue with these worthwhile schemes could therefore purchase some cycles, perhaps out of the secondary Class 1 NIC savings, and make them available for employees to borrow. Where the exemption no longer applies and the schemes continue, there will be a reporting issue for the now taxable benefit in kind for those post-18th of December 2009 schemes. The taxable benefit will have to be reported at Section L of the P11D as an asset placed at the employee's disposal, and that benefit will be liable to Class 1A NICs. Another question that has often been raised with me by AAT members is the market value of the cycle when sold to the employee after the end of the salary sacrifice period, usually 12 months or 24 months. If the cycle is sold for a pound or any other nominal price, which is below the market value, the cash equivalent difference between the market value and the price paid by the employee will be a taxable and reportable benefit in kind. The employer must report this benefit at Section A of the P11D as an asset transferred to the employee, and that benefit is again liable to Class 1 National Insurance contributions. Next, HMRC has turned its attention to salary sacrifice arrangements that rely on the employment income exemption for support for public buses, but where HMRC says that it is being used to provide employees with bus passes. HMRC says that these salary sacrifice arrangements are based on the incorrect understanding of the conditions that need to be satisfied in order for support for public buses to apply. HMRC says that the salary sacrifice arrangements do not relate to the provision of direct support for specified bus routes or specified bus services. The main problem is that the exemption is for employer support to specific bus services. And even where it is, the benefit of free travel is being provided by way of an area-wide bus pass, which is not covered by the exemption. HMRC, in accepting that there has been some confusion and that it has not clearly communicated matters to employers, has removed tax relief for any new arrangements after the 18th of December 2009, but it will allow relief to continue for any pre-18th December 2009 arrangements until the bus pass expires, provided that the bus pass lasts for no more than 12 months. For any renewal or any new arrangements after the 18th of December 2009, all the conditions must be satisfied for tax relief to continue to be available. Where the bus pass arrangements continue, but the conditions for exemption are not satisfied, the employer will have to report the benefit on the P11D and then pay any Class 1A NICs liability arising. Section 5, Workplace Meals. HMRC has more recently published an explanatory note on restricting tax relief for subsidised canteens, where the entitlement is part of a salary sacrifice or flexible benefit scheme. A clause is being introduced to amend Section 317 of the Income Tax Earnings and Pensions Act 2003 and to restrict the tax exemption for the benefit of free or subsidised meals where an employee has an entitlement in conjunction with salary sacrifice or flexible benefit arrangements to employer-provided free or subsidised meals. Section 317 removes the tax charge on the provision of meals for directors or employees if the meal is provided in a canteen or on the employer's premises and the following conditions are met. The meal is on a reasonable basis. All employees or all employees at a particular work location may obtain a free or subsidised meal or a voucher for one. And in the case of a hotel, catering or similar business, if free or subsidised meals are provided for employees in a restaurant or dining room, when meals are being served to the public, part of the dining area must be designated for staff use only, and the meals must be taken in that part. The amendment clause will remove the tax exemption in circumstances where employees are effectively using a designated amount of their gross pay to fund the purchase of food and drink at work. HMRC has confirmed that the amended clause will not affect subsidised benefits that are quantifiable but not connected to salary sacrifice or flexible benefit arrangements. The change will be achieved by amending Section 317 to restrict its application, introducing a new subsection 4AA that will prevent the exemption from applying where the provision of free or subsidised meals is linked to a salary sacrifice arrangement in which the employee has agreed to reduce their existing taxable employment income and is to be provided in return with food and drink or the means of obtaining it. A new subsection 4AB will prevent the exemption from applying where the provision of free or subsidised meals is linked to a flexible benefits arrangement in which the employee and employer have agreed that part of the reward for that employment will be provided as food and drink or the means of obtaining it, rather than some other form of employment reward that the employee could have received instead. The new subsections will apply equally to salary sacrifice and flexible benefits remuneration arrangements entered into before, on, and after the 6th of April 2011. This means that the exemption in Section 317 will not apply from the 6th of April 2011, where employees are using part of their gross pay to fund the benefit. Section 6. HMRC introduced a new tax exemption for employer-supported childcare in April 2005 and made changes to the NIC rules, which meant that initially there would be no income tax or Class 1 NIC charge on the first £50 of any childcare vouchers provided by the employer. There were conditions that the childcare had to be qualifying, which meant that paying grandma to look after the kids didn't qualify. The tax on NIC relief was increased the following year and to this day remains at £55 per week or £243 per month. And many employers now use a salary sacrifice scheme to allow employees to take advantage of the tax savings, which could be 20% for a basic rate taxpayer or 40% for a higher rate taxpayer. There are also Class 1 national insurance contribution savings of either 11% or 1% if the earnings are above the upper earnings limit. It had been rumoured that the government was intending to remove the tax relief. But on the 3rd of December 2009, HMRC announced changes to restrict the tax relief to the basic rate from the 6th of April 2011. The change will not, however, affect any director or employee that is already enjoying the higher rate tax relief at the moment. And it will only be applied to new arrangements entered into after the 6th of April 2011. The change is being introduced in a convoluted way, with basic rate taxpayers getting tax relief on £55, then 40% taxpayers getting relief on only £28, and finally the new 50% taxpayer will be restricted to tax relief on just £22. In other words, what this is doing is giving everyone £11 of tax relief. 55 at 20%, 22 at 50%. Plus, of course, the national insurance contribution savings, which remain the same. This change does not affect workplace nurseries, where full relief is available, providing the qualifying conditions are met. Despite these apparent attacks on the use of salary sacrifice schemes by HMRC, they still represent a useful tool for employers in implementing what are often quite simple remuneration packages. There is nothing wrong with taking advantage of available tax relief and exemption from earnings for Class 1 NIC purposes. What is now necessary is that we advise our clients, perhaps with our assistance, to review any existing salary sacrifice or flexible benefit schemes where salary is being substituted for cycles, bus passes, or free meals. It might also be a good opportunity to review any other salary sacrifice arrangements to ensure that they are effective and do work properly. I hope you will have found this helpful. Thank you.